Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backstretch here at Saratoga Racecourse. We're on the set, the Capital OTB set, for another in our series, our summer series of podcasts. We're going to continue with our conversations motif, and this afternoon I'm joined by Anthony Tony Podlaski, affectionately known to his friends and co-workers as Ski. I've known him for a long time. I call him Tony, or T, and he has an official title. His official title with the New York Racing Association is Press Box Coordinator and Media Liaison. And I'm going to give Tony a little bit of time to tell you exactly what that means. Tony, I want to welcome you to the backstretch, and thank you for joining me. This is going to be a pleasure. So let's talk to the folks.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom, for having me on the podcast here this afternoon. Over the 25 years, my job has changed, or at least the responsibilities. And
wait, you said 25 years?
25 years, yes. I've been in the press box at Saratoga Racecourse, plus downstate for the special events like the Belmont Jockey Club Gold Cup, the Breeders' Cup a couple of times that New York had hosted it. And yeah, it's been 25 years.
Wow, 25 years of months, of the month up here,
yep.
Right? Because you are a full-time college professor, yes?
Yes, yes. Yep. I call it the ultimate career. I really do. Because when I start teaching at the end of August, or maybe now this year will be the beginning of September, I'm pretty much in class doing my thing right up through graduation, which would be right in the middle of May. And then I have about 6 weeks off. You know, my family, or at least my wife, still teaching at that point. So I have, like, some time for myself. And then, you know, maybe a couple weeks together, and then all of a sudden, you know, the meet starts. And then once the meet closes, back into the cycle, back into teaching. But one of the things I do like about working up here in the transition going to teaching is that I'm pretty much flying at 32,000 feet during this meet. So when I get back into the classroom, the first day, you know, my students are trying to figure out who is this guy who's so, you know, high energetic, drinking coffee and just ready to fire right away. I think it's one of the benefits of just working up here. It's just, the fast pace, or at least the high energy, just really sets me up for the rest of the school year, you know, at that stage.
I would argue that what you spend the rest of the year kind of coming down.
Yeah, I do agree on that part, especially by December, and not as much as, you know, in the end of the semester, spring semester, in probably April going into May, but by December, I'm like, yeah, I really want to, you know, like a couple of weeks for myself.
Now, I really don't know this. Are you always an Albany area guy? Where was your home?
Yeah, I grew up in Columbia County in Chatham, not far from the farms in North Chatham. But eventually,
you go to Chatham High School.
Yep, okay. Went to Chatham High School. But then from there, you know, I actually didn't live far behind the county fair, where they had a lot of harness racing trials during the day, and then in the evening they would, you know, turn the harness track into a demolition derby course, which was pretty interesting. Kind of see, you know, pick up parts the next morning on the track itself. But for the most part, I kind of got to see a lot of more of the harness racing than I did with the flats, but I, you know, really became involved in racing probably by the time I was, by my teenager years. Just, you know, something about it was probably the year of Cardin Askren slew a gold, 1984. Was a fan of Oscar Barrera with Shifty Sheik and what he had done with the horse and almost pulling off the upset. So I think it was just that it's like any other sport. There's always going to be some moment. As a baseball fan, you know, I was a Red Sox fan since I was five, and it had a lot to do with the Carlton Fisk home run. So I think there's, like, you catch something in television, or at least you see something on TV, like, wow, that really is appealing, and that's why, you know, it kept me into the sport itself.
Now, you're an Ithaca Bomber, yes? You shipped out to to Ithaca, yeah?
No, I actually went to Morrisville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I left, I actually didn't go to college right out of high school. I needed some time to kind of figure out what I wanted to do, and so I started actually taking a couple classes at Hudson Valley, and then transferred to Morrisville for a journalism degree, then came back for a degree in UAlbany, and then from there, didn't tell the story about how I met my wife, but she was part of helped me to where I've gotten to this point as well.
Well, how did you meet her?
I actually met her here at Saratoga in 1990.
Right.
I was basically, as a fan, coming up to the track, placing bets, and I was decided I'd go to her window. And
she was a mutual clerk.
She was a mutual clerk at the time. So, you know, when I after winning a couple races, like, you know, and I think all of us who are horse players have experienced or have some sense of, geez, there's got to be some sense of luck somewhere. Or at least there's something that causes someone to be, you know, to be winning. Or at least something, like,
hold
some
on
divine
a second.
Intervention.
You mean to tell me that she ran a two-way window, a round-trip window? Money in and money out?
Money in and money out, yes, absolutely.
You know, there are not that many windows here
right.
that are round-trip. Most of them are one-way.
Yes. Yeah, this case here, I ended up winning a few races. And I said, geez, I said, you know, maybe it's karma. Maybe it's good luck. And I said, I'll just keep going for the sake that I was winning. I think just as any horse player would, we have strategies of how we handicap a race and how we end up, you know, going with a selection, how we would make the bet. But sometimes there's going to be that moment of, geez, if there's a streak, you don't want to miss a streak. It actually reminds me of a line out of the movie Bull Durham when Kevin Costner says to Tim Robbins that you don't mess with a streak, kind of just cleaning the language up a little bit. But basically, if there's something that's happening, it's continuously being good, don't mess with the streak.
Don't change your routine.
Right. So luckily...
I want to know something. Did you put a $50 bet in and say, will you marry me?
No, this is one of the, actually, at the end of the meet, because about halfway through the meet, I kept going to her window, just, you know, even with a couple of losing bets. You know, and I remember one day she said, do you want some dip and vegetables? And I was like petrified. It's like, oh my God, I was like, why is this mutual clerk offering me food in between, you know,
mm-hmm.
bets? And it was a Wednesday or a Thursday at that point. But by the end of the meet, I was like, geez, I said, should I ask this, you know, this young woman out? And definitely got the courage, asked her out. And I think the only thing that shocked me is like, hold on, and she left. I thought she was getting security when I asked her. And so she came back, and it's like, yes, so, you know, like, let's go to Skipper's Wings, which was a popular wing place in Albany. I want to say now almost four decades ago. And then since then, you know, we've been together.
That's a great story. So, why don't you just share with the folks, you know, what it means to be the press box coordinator?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Now, because things have changed in
yes.
the box over the last 25 years,
yeah.
And then some of the things that you do as media liaisons.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about the box as coordinator.
Yeah, I think if anything, and part of it has to probably do with social media. It's just getting the information out there as quick as possible.
Okay.
So, for example, after a stake race, I'll get the margins from Danny Kaye.
You're talking about the beaten lengths.
Yeah, beaten lengths.
And Danny Kaye is the chart caller.
Right. As well as Brian affronting Heath before. You know, usually one of the three, you know, what doesn't matter the stake race, because immediately they want to know, okay, what was the margin of the race and, you know, what was the order of finish? That's because... first thing people want to do is tweet that out, and rightfully so. I mean, people want to know, all right, well, you know, what was the margin? What was the order finished at that point?
So let me just say, the modern social media has compressed time for you guys up in the box.
I think there's some validity to that part of it. I also think it's just competition. Everybody wants to, you know, be the first one to get it out there as well. But it's not just a stake race. It could be a two-year-old race that horse wins by, you know, daylight. And they say, what's the margin? Because they want to get that information out to the rest of the masses or those who are following. Again, a lot of times it is going to be Twitter.
Okay, so there's the social media aspect
of
it. And
that's one thing I've noticed has changed. And that's something I've seen over the last 5 years, mm-hmm. just trying to get the information out there as quick as possible. And usually social media, in particular Twitter, is probably the quickest way.
All right, so are you in the winner's circle interviewing after almost every stakes race?
I used to, but... you know, I think because there's so much more of a need to get the information out there, I need to be more in the press box and making sure that's done. And usually we have a team of writers and those who write barners who will also work with quotes. But sometimes I'll help out if needed for, you know, if they need help with quotes.
So how have you seen the whole notion of the press box here at this meet mm-hmm. evolve as the meet has evolved? I can say, mm-hmm. You know, I've been coming here since the late 60s,
yeah.
Not to the box, but the whole coverage of racing, the whole notion mm-hmm. of, quote, press box
right.
has changed. And as print media has seemed to walk away from the game, things have changed. Yeah. Why don't you just comment on that, your perception
of that? Well, I think, when I came on board in 1990, or 94, I should say, there was a lot of us in the press box, a lot of media coverage from, didn't matter if it was local with the Times Union or the Gazette, we had the Troy Record. I remember Chris Fitzgerald and somebody else was up there. Maybe it was Kevin Moran.
Yes.
And then at the same time, this was way before there was a partnership between the Troy Record and the Saratogan. And then right next to them, there'd be Mike Veach of the Saratogan, and I believe Nicole Russo was with them as well. She now writes for the Daily Racing Form. I mean, there was one area that was really packed with just that group there.
And now you're talking now about local coverage.
Right, local coverage. And then on top of that, you had people like Joseph Durso for the New York Times, Ed Schuyler from Associated Press. They would be there on a frequent basis. Clyde Hurt, the late Clyde Hurt, who used to do a lot with Sports Eye when that publication was working, was in there. The New York Post and the Daily News.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. The Metropolitan New York, where Niren runs the rest of the year at two tracks, has really walked away. And there were some really great guys and talented people covering racing for New York. Just to name a few, let's start with Paul Morant.
Right. I mean, Bugsy, we used to call him.
Bugsy?
I mean, Paul Morant was a really good writer. I mean, and I think one of the things I've had this conversation with, those who are still, in the press box today, it's really tough to watch, fellow, turf writers, pass. It's, the list is becoming really extensive. Paul Morant is one of them. Rick Lang. I mean, list is endless. I mean, clockers like Rich McCarthy.
Right.
It's really unbelievable and overwhelming to see it. See a lot of these writers. Pretty much, pass. I mean, the toughest one for me has been Matt Graves. I was pallbearer last February, or saying last year, last February. Because he was
well, one you of, worked with him at the Times Union.
Yes,
didn't you?
That's maybe one of the other things we probably didn't even mention here. It's just working in the Times Union as well. I was actually on the sports desk for about 13 years before I started full time teaching at Hudson Valley. But Matt Graves was one of my idols as a teenager. I loved reading his stuff. His columns and his writing, and at the same time too, as a teenager, Tim Wilkin was also starting to write for the Times Union as well.
Wilkin as a teenager, or you as a teenager?
I made myself a teenager, but actually, Tim is about probably about 15 years older. And I'm aging him too quickly now. Probably about at least 10 years older than I am, those two I actually admired their coverage in racing, so. And more so with Matt, as I said, I faithfully read his columns every week. When I was a teenager, and to kind of get to meet him for the first time in the Times Union, if you want to talk about starstruck, I was starstruck. That was a starstruck moment for me. It's like, oh wow, I get to work with my idol, and I think I was just really caught back. Maybe a couple of weeks, going to the Preakness, we were doing high school, coverage, and he turned around and asked me, he's like, who do you like in the Preakness, in the Derby and Preakness, and I kind of told him what I liked, and it's like, wow, my idol asked me my thoughts on a particular race, but kind of getting back to, the bigger picture here, what you were asking, it's tough to see a lot of these riders, just pass, and... and even when some of the even employees, we just lost Carmen Barrera last week. And it's tough to see these people, just pass. And that's kind of seeing what I'm seeing part of the media coverage is that a lot of these people are also not getting replaced as well.
To what degree, and we'll talk about some of these these other folks, and I just want to say this, I was fortunate to know Matt as well, and one of the things that I really liked about Matt is that there was this dry sense of humor to him.
Understated.
Understated?
Yeah, there's so many stories. Actually, Tim and I have shared a lot this meet, and just not only just in the press box, but even working with him in the office. And he had a pretty unique sense of humor, but it was not, he wasn't a person that would be laughing out loud a lot. Right. It would just, he'd be kind of like nodding his head, in, you know, with that kind of silent laughter, you know, that he just kind of put down the joke, you know, in the end.
Oh, he always got the joke.
Right. And I think one of the best ones was, this is maybe, I'm thinking about maybe 10 years ago now. He had a rough year with his picks. They were losing, you know, his picks were losing by a nose at the wire. And I just remember the his best bet is maybe about halfway through the meet. He just looked up and just, and I know what you're saying, to, you know, to divine intervention, why? You know, basically in frustration. And all of us are kind of just chuckling at him because realizing that this was just, you know, a tough meet. He was trying to figure out why this was happening to him all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Divine intervention. Why?
Yeah.
The gods and goddesses of thoroughbred racing are causing us this great pain that is offset not often enough by
right.
the great joy of getting it right. Where I was going to go, okay, print media seems to be on the wane. To what degree, or what would you say about blogs and social media and the internet as... as the place where we now get our...
Yeah, I don't know if it's... I mean, print is probably struggling, but there may be more of a shift than anything else where the writing is becoming more electronic. And as you pointed out, with blogs themselves, even with websites themselves as well. I mean, there's the information is getting out there, but just in a different, you know, in a different medium, I guess, is what we're looking at. And in the past, I think newspapers gave away, you know, the information for free. Now it's, you know, some, you know, publications, even including the Form itself, Daily Racing Form, Saratogian Gazette, you know, even the Times Union. You got to pay. You know, you have to pay for, you know, premium content or premium for the subscription itself. So I think it's just there's been a shift more than anything else. But, you know, at the same time, too, it's just, you know, I think most of us know that advertising is the backbone, the life support system of any, you know, any news outlet. And, you know, you just got to figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah, there's no question. The interesting thing from advertising, absolutely. I often wonder how much advertisers value the racing market because it's tough to get people to advertise unless they're already in the business advertising to other people in the business. It's a niche advertising market as horse racing in itself, as a sport. If you compare it to other, quote, major sports, you know, it's a different cultural kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like any other specialized sport. I mean, obviously, we can just pretty much say with the ones that are going to draw the attention from, baseball, football, definitely football season coming up, hockey and basketball. And obviously, you know, soccer is still, you know, making its way into, you know, trying to be at least gain that attention as well, especially when you're looking at the Premier League. And, you know, you got NBC coverage, you know, on, especially with, a separate sports station, you know, Saturdays and Sundays, you know, that's what it's being televised. And then the other sports, you know, auto racing is still going to have its impact as well. You know, and you got to figure out where horse racing fits in that mix.
You know, it's interesting because you started with baseball. One of my arguments about the difficulty of this game is that whether you like it or not, we're a ball culture. American kids learn about baseballs, soccer balls, tennis balls, golf balls, all sorts of round objects very early in life. And I would say also that NASCAR has a cultural bend to it too, or affinity to it. And that in this region, in this city, in the capital city, Tri-City area, let's go another 80 to 100 miles, this track and this experience is part of the culture of this region. And that's great for the area, great for the meet, great for the game, but it's something that the game lacks in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I'll leave the experts to figure out that one, how to make that work. I mean, it's... I have no explanation to it.
Well, it's not an... I'm not asking you to explain it. I'm saying that it's something that this is a game you and I love and people we know love, and the question is how do you grow fan base? And if you line it up, that, okay, we're competing with kids who have learned about some other sport
right.
that they can participate in, watch on TV, and have those some of those yeah. moments that you talked about earlier. How do we address that? And I'm not asking yeah. you for your answer.
It's interesting. I mean, I kind of tie it into college a little bit. You know, it's the same same thing. How do you basically draw students to college? And in each generation is going to be different. I mean, obviously, with the if you're looking at a younger generation, we call it Generation Z now. How do you look at that 18-year-olds, and how are you going to get them attracted? Especially when a lot of them want quick information,
yeah.
and it's they may want to be entrepreneurs. They want to be coming up with the next big thing. It's tough. It's tough.
How often have you been to the Derby? Have you been to Churchill Downs?
I've been there during Derby Week.
Okay.
I was part of a sports journalism seminar. This was something when Churchill Downs hosted, I think it was maybe in 94, I was invited. They basically took 50 of the top student sports journalists in the country who applied. It's like applying to college.
Sure.
So they go through all the applications, resumes, and clips and so forth, and they say, okay, we're going to take 20 student journalists who are focusing on writing, then we'll take 20 that are focusing on broadcasting, and then maybe 10 who are focusing on photography. So for the entire week, we would be, or not, yeah, actually it was the week and going into the weekend, we would learn more about the industry, media coverage, and so forth. But the best thing about being there part of Derby Week was I got to shadow someone. And the person I got to shadow was Jay Privman, who I actually now get to see. And yeah. he was with the New York Times at that years ago. And now I get to see him coming back, working with him.
He's a class individual.
Yeah, yeah, I really like Jay a lot. And I definitely learned a lot from him that week. And I think the best moment I had with him was getting to meet the bald eagle, Charlie Whittingham. It was one of the best moments that I think as not only as a racing fan, but just someone who really wanted to be involved in the media aspect of it. That was probably the biggest treat of all.
I'd like you to talk about two people from Press Box Lore. Mm-hmm. First, Joe Hirsch. You were here
yes.
when Joe was here, and mm-hmm. he was, into September of his life and riding life. Mm-hmm. I met him once at a New York Turf Riders dinner, and it was just a joy and a pleasure. Talk a little about Joe Hirsch.
I want to say he was an institution of media coverage in the sport itself, and the way he had written stories. He was a good storyteller of just sharing, about a trainer or a horse or jockey, whatever it may be. It's probably one of the things I'm going to definitely remember him, as a writer, as a person. I've never met anyone so kind, and just so low key. And I don't think anything.
Unimpressed with himself, you would say?
Yeah, I think he just wanted to be just, I think just anyone on the backstretch or anyone on the racetrack. He was really, I don't want to use the word humble, but basically he was very quiet, and if he needed anything, definitely I'd help him out in any means. But I think he was just one of the great people out there. He's just kind, generous, and knew the sport well. And then I would say he was also an ambassador as well through his writing.
Yeah.
And I think, that's one thing I will probably say about Joe.
I often quip that we don't have the characters that we had in the games for many years.
I agree with that.
I don't think there are too many people who aren't familiar with Guys and Dolls and Nathan yeah. Detroit and all those yeah. names. Now I want to go to one of the characters that I'm most enamored of, and that is Harvey Pack. Harvey had a rock and roll relationship with the New York Racing Association. Harvey created his niche in the game through radio. Mm-hmm. He hosted the Paddock Show for many, many yeah. years, and he had his office, and he had a place in the box. And he either how am I going to put it? He either sought the role of curmudgeon or actually was a bit of a curmudgeon. But talk about Harvey Pack and your experience.
Yeah,
with
I want to look at the word curmudgeon for a moment and the definition behind it. I can tell you with his presence in the press box, and especially the latter years that, you know, he had come up there and, you know, he would say some things like, you know, we'd say, hey, you know, you got to kind of, what are you going to do, throw me out of the press box? And that's, you know, it's like, it's one of the things about Harvey is that I think he really tested his limits, with his presence and seeing how far he could get. And, but he's also another one that, yes, he may have tested the limits, and you know whether it was an act or if it was part of his persona being curmudgeon. He's also generous and kind as well, and I think that's the part that I think that maybe not many people realize as well is that he was a kind-hearted person.
Right.
He always had his thoughts, and he was going to make his thoughts clear.
Of course,
but I also think he was a kind person as well.
No, I agree, and I'm glad you framed him that way. Yeah. He was an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
He was certainly opinionated. He really took the game seriously, but got the joke about the folks who took it too seriously, and was certainly never afraid to say what needed to be said. I'll just tell you this, because you may not be aware of it. I did a series of interviews with him here on the Backstretch set, and what we were doing was cut-ins and cutouts around the TV shows that he did with the old timers. I know you've seen that.
Yes.
So I wrote an introduction for Harvey, and I read it and spoke it into the camera. And sitting next to me, he says, "When did I die?" what is this, a eulogy or what? Because he couldn't take a compliment,
right,
if you will. So I find I miss his presence in any shape or form because he was good for the game.
Yeah, I mean I do miss his presence as well, and there are so many great stories of him in the press box. Some I cannot even dare to say even on a podcast here, but definitely and I think that it's going to apply to anybody that's been in the press box, whether they've passed or they're still around, is that there's always going to be stories that I can take away. And I actually remember Fran LaBelle, who was in he was with the racing form, and he was an assistant in the communications office for a few years. And he said to me, "Skate, out of all people, it was like you're going to probably be the one that's going to be able to share the stories of everyone in that press box. You've seen them all, the great times that you've had with him, and the best moments as well. Definitely." And I think he's right about that. There's been so many people in that press box over the years that are not only good, kind-hearted people, worked hard, in getting a story out there, but also too they had a personality that made them unique and entertaining as well. Whether it was Harvey Pack, Clyde Hurt, as I mentioned earlier, even Matt Graves as well.
Sure. Well, you do have in you 25 years in the press box, a memoir by Tony Podlaski, whether you're framing it or thinking about it, because, as I know you, you talk about Joe Hirsch helping people.
Yeah.
Your entire job is, as I think you see it, is to make everybody who has access to the press box able to do their job, and anything that they need, you provided them with. And if it wasn't at hand, I've seen you run all over the place go take care of them. And, let me finish, Skate, please, because, I see you as one of those guys. You're a journalist, so you're an observer.
Mm-hmm.
You're unobtrusive. You don't inject yourself anywhere. And you're just having a good time doing it. So you do sit in a very good place to be somewhat of a historian for this particular press box experience.
Yeah, I enjoy what I do. I really do. And there's some challenging moments. It's any job, teaching is as well. But I love what I do here. It's, I enjoy working with everyone in the media. I want to get the information out there to, and I don't know if it, if it's an ambassador of the sport, whatever it may be. I just love the sport, and I just want to see, the coverage out there. So I just want to make sure I'm getting it out there to everyone as much as possible, as quick as possible. And that's, and I do take pride in what I do. I enjoy actually being on the backstretch here in the mornings as well. The stories are, are riveting, entertaining, engaging. It doesn't matter if I, actually I'm working on a story on Cherie DeVoe. I think either going for next week or the following week. But I would,
I hope she's got a live firster.
We'll see how this two-year-old runs today, but like I like talking to even not necessarily the mainstream trainers. I mean, yeah. Obviously you can go talk to Chad Brown, or I can go talk to Chad Brown anytime, or Steve Asmussen, or anyone. But I want to hear the other stories from other horsemen, like Tim Hamm, who is from Presque Isle Downs, actually from Ohio. Really impressive background and what he has, and just in the story behind races. That's the stuff I like to get out there. A guy who, just went to college. I believe he was studying business, where he was a football player, lineman for Youngstown State, and then went into construction, got a horse, as just a hobby, and then now all of a sudden he is pretty much has a good circuit, or at least a good foundation, where it's not just with just training horses and racing them, but also two part of breeding with a partnership with Windstar. So it's those kind of stories that I like to get out there, that kind of give it the personality to the, to the person, to the sport.
I'd be remiss. You can read Tony's journalism in Saratoga Today. You write a weekly column for them. You've done this, I think, second or third year?
Yeah, it's my third year doing this. But as I said, I've done a lot of writing with the Times Union as well. Definitely here with New York Racing Association, whether it be notes or, in the past I used to do some advances as well. But I usually get something out there.
Well, Tony, I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank you for your contribution to the game and making sure that press folks up here have everything they need. So best to you, best to your family. And ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us to the end of this conversation with Tony Podlaski. He is the press box coordinator and media liaison for the New York Racing Association, and he's from the region. So, Tony, be well. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Tom.